No, I have never known what that meant. There's only one, excuse me, there's only one possible thing that I have ever been able to feel might have been what that meant. Mm-hmm. And that was during the years that I took care of Peggy during her last illness. Mm-hmm. So then Baba reappeared to me. His eyes reappeared to me. And then I was excused. I don't remember leaving the barn. I don't remember leaving that embrace. I don't remember anything beyond that. And this was our first physical meeting. Mm-hmm. Of course, we were there with him in 56 and 58. All those meetings in the barn.
In 52, then, did you see him again?
No.
You went back to New York?
Back to Washington.
Back to Washington.
No, that's the only time we saw him, just that very brief meeting. Mm-hmm.
And in 56, you were at the airport, weren't you, when Baba came?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's true. Yes, right. So we saw him come down the steps from the plane, and at that point he was able to walk with such speed and grace. He walked with such great grace, but yet it was I hate to attribute it to a manly grace, but it was just beautiful to see him walk. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen anybody walk. Now, you know, that's something that everybody does. Something that's, but everything that he did was different, but not. How can I say it? Everything. Every expression, every movement, everything he did was different, but not, there's nothing odd about it. It was so naturally beautiful that at the time it didn't seem to be extraordinary, mm-hmm. you know, but you knew it was. Yeah. His physical beauty, I think, was visible because everything that he did and everything that was done around him, everything around him was extraordinary. It seemed as though there were senses or feelings that made the things that we observed in him so very beautiful. I guess it was like when we see somebody that we love so very much. They're much more beautiful than anyone else could see. I think that was a lot of it. Although that beauty was definitely there, it wasn't imaginary at all. So, at one point, Peggy wanted to... Ivy never arranged a personal interview with us, with Baba. I never understood why. Because we wanted very much to meet him again on that level.
Yeah.
But Peggy wanted very much to go to Baba and learn whether our work was a disservice to him, whether it pleased him. Peggy especially wanted to know from Baba,
mm-hmm.
not that she wanted him to say, I want you to do this, or not that she wanted a mandate from him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just sort of the attitude of, if what we're doing is not what we should be doing for you, then
right.
please say so and let us just step out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You see. In other words, it's not a feeling of something that we want to do for him, but does he want to allow us to do it for him? You see.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not being able to succeed in this through Ivy and knew that she couldn't, Peggy went to Kitty. And Kitty was very much surprised to know that this had not been done before. And so she immediately went to Baba,
mm-hmm.
and presented our petition to Baba in the matter of having an interview.
Mm-hmm.
So we were taken to the lagoon cabin,
mm-hmm.
and Baba's chair was sitting in the middle of the lagoon cabin, rather in the, against the wall where it usually sits. So there was just room enough for us to kneel in front of Baba in order to, of course, we knew that he knew. We knew that, you know, he knew everything, but we wanted to know. And of course, he understood exactly what we wanted to know. I'm saying that because I don't think that anyone else could have understood our language, because we were crying, we were blubbering, we were just incoherent almost, you know, trying. And I always had this feeling when I was very close to Baba. In fact, when we met, I didn't say a word. I had no words.
Yeah.
I've always thought that his silence was because no words, even words that he could have used, could have never expressed his love for us. So we tried to tell Baba that it didn't matter to us where this was to be done. It didn't matter to us under what auspices or what anything. Is, shall we continue or shall we not continue?
Mm-hmm.
So Baba replied by saying, what does Ivy say? And we said we felt that this is what she wanted us to do.
Well, at this point, you were both Sufis under her?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we were both preceptors.
Mm-hmm.
And so he put his right hand on Peggy's head. He put his left hand on my head. And he said, do it together. Now, I think this is important to try to explain at this point. Baba did not say, I want you to do this. He did not say, I order you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
He permitted it.
Mm-hmm.
You see. Now, I don't, I'm sure you won't want my remarks from this point in a book, but I want to make a record of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like. I know. We're not putting any sort of controversy.
Yeah, of course.
Personally.
Of course. Now, when Mercer Martin chose Mercer Deuce to be the Mercer, that ought to have been fixed, final. But when Mercer realized that she could come here to India, to Baba, to do exactly what we did.
Yes.
You see, she wasn't going, I don't believe she was going to Baba to say, you know, put me in charge of this or anything of that sort. She just wanted to know whether her future activities would be fruitful for him or for his lovers. I never discussed this with her, but I'm sure her motivation was the very highest possible. And of course, I think he very much did for her what he did for us. Not saying, I'm establishing an order and I want you to run it. The order was already fixed and established, but he gave it guidelines, and so, as you well know. But what I wanted to point out, and I would like you to understand, that when we did this, when we went to Baba, Mercy was very... I don't believe she ever forgave us for it. Really. Because we went sort of over her head, so to speak. We went round her, you see. And of course, this was very, very upsetting to her. Because I think she realized in her heart that this is something that she ought to have done for us. I don't know, but I feel that way. There were other instances where we disobeyed her because we felt that we had to do what Baba would want us to do. One occasion was when we promised Joe and Carrie Harb that we would drive them from Washington down to Myrtle Beach. They were coming from California.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote back to them and promised them that we would. Now, this was a time when Baba was stressing, don't make any promises that you don't fulfill to the best of your capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very, very aware of this at this particular time. Another time he stressed honesty. And so this was very much in her mind. So we had made this promise to Joe and Carrie. So when Mercer asked us to drive two other people to the center, we said, no, Mercer, we've already promised. We, you know, this is...
Satish, on deck, Kone. Satish, Kone.
So this is something that we have made a commitment to these people, and we must keep it. You see. So, throughout all of her work, Baba was always the one that we followed, the one that we obeyed in our hearts. We worked within the structure of the Sufi order. We worked under Murshida, but we never imagined that she was the goal. Mm. We worked with her because we felt she also was working for him. Mm-hmm. So there was no problem there. But we never accepted her as an intermediary between ourselves and Baba. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, caused her some consternation from time to time.
The other preceptors, you think, had that feeling?
I don't know. I have no idea what anybody else is feeling. But our group was totally different from the West Coast group.
Yeah, that's what I've always heard.
Totally different. Murshida said that our meetings were too devotional, and that's what we wanted them to be. But anyhow.
After, did you have any other meetings after that meeting in the barn? You don't know what date that was, do you?
No, I don't. No, I don't. Yes, we did have.
It was in the afternoon or morning.
That meeting where we went to Baba about, I think it was in the evening. I'm quite sure it was in the evening.
Had you already been on the center for a few days? And then that,
mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And of course, this was something that was, Peggy was feeling, if Baba goes back to India and I don't learn this, I'll never rest.
So it was toward the end of the stay visit, or
I don't know.
Somewhere.
I really can't say. No. I don't remember. And let's see now. Another happening that I think I always tell people in public about our trip to Brook Green Gardens. Mm-hmm. Taking movies of Baba was difficult on the center because it was a deep shadow or a bright sun and straw hats in front of the lens and all those sorts of distractions and diversions that, of course, you got what you could, you know. You just took the pictures and hoped for the best. So when I knew we were going down to Brook Green Gardens with Baba, I felt this is the golden opportunity. I could imagine those huge oak trees on either side with the moss hanging from them, beautiful. I could see Baba walking down the path with his sadra gently blowing in the breeze and his beautiful stature and walk, you know. And I thought, these are going to be the greatest movies ever, not only that I've ever taken, but anybody's ever taken. So we arrived at the parking lot before Baba did. We went down in a car. In a bus, I'm sorry, and he came in a car. Mm-hmm. So I was standing by the entranceway, had my camera ready, and as I saw him approach, I got the camera up and I started taking the pictures. And Baba walked directly up to me, and he put his hand out to me about this close, mm-hmm. and tilted his head to the side and smiled. And then I followed him, or I anticipated him. I would go around so I would be able to take his picture coming toward me. And I spent the entire afternoon taking movies. At one point, I was behind a brick wall. The wall was about so high. And I was trying to take pictures of him. He was seated on the ground, leaning up against a small tree. And he was so beautiful sitting there.
Yeah.
Of course, you couldn't see any of the other people, just see him. Oh, I thought, this is so beautiful. And I got chewed out by the guards for running on the grass, and all sorts of things happened. So when we got home, I sent the pictures out for processing, got them back. They came, they were returned in the mail. And I couldn't wait to go down to pick Peggy up at work for her to see them with me. I just couldn't wait. So I set up the projector and the screen all by myself in the apartment, pulled the shades and everything, started the movies. And when everything was fine, I got to the point. Bob was coming across the parking lot, and I was so excited I didn't know what to do. You know, I said, here he comes. And I saw him put his hand out and tilt his head and smile. And from that point on, I didn't get a single solitary picture of Bob that whole afternoon. I used I must have been three rolls of film, 8mm film. Nothing. Not overexposure, not underexposure, not jiggling, not panning too fast. Nothing. Black. Done. And I'd sit there watching the screen. I'd say, well, yeah, this part's bad, but it'll come in a minute. It'll come in a minute. It never did come. So I was bitterly disappointed.
I can understand because I took a lot of movies and videos and films so I can know how.
But I realized that I had gone on a great big ego trip. You know, I was attached to the results.
Yeah.
I was thinking how much people would feel, oh, look at those movies, Andy got a Baba, you know, all those thoughts were running through my mind.
Yeah.
And I missed everything. I absolutely missed everything.
Yeah.
I missed being close to him. I missed hearing his discussion about Buddha, which he was doing when he's sitting and leaning against that little tree.
Yeah.
I missed the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I always say to people, this is what happens to us when we do our own thing.
Yeah.
You know, people say, I want to do it my way. You know?
Yeah.
Say, no, don't do it your way. You've been doing it your way all your life and many lives. Do it his way, you know. So had I been sensible and realized that my responsibility was to be close, as close to him as I could be.
Yeah.
So I learned a great lesson from that. Actually learned more than I would have learned had I had the movies. And I've always felt, and it wasn't the fact that the film was bad or anything, because at the very end, there was a very clear picture of people going into Ivy's house in Washington. I mean...
Did you have that first little few minutes of Obama coming?
That's right. Yeah. Up until the point where he put his hand out, you see. Well, anyhow. I remember very well our last personal meeting with Baba was at the airport in Wilmington. There was no airport in Myrtle Beach at that time. So we drove up to, we went up in a bus actually, up to, I believe, up to the airport to see him off. Baba was sitting on a concrete bench in the airport building. That building is no longer there. And we were all standing sort of in a crescent in front of him. Not really very close to him, though, but kind of back. And Baba seemed to be just looking at all of us. And Peggy used to say, why doesn't he look in my eyes? Why does he always look just past my ear? Baba got up and went to the men's room, which was to his right. And I noticed with some pleasure, and I don't know why, he went into the colored men's room. At that time there was separation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he very soon came out and went over to another, he went to the right again and went over to this wall over here and sat on another concrete bench. And of course, we didn't, it's funny, but the group did not follow him over there for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There wasn't maybe no reason, but we didn't. And we heard someone call Peg Andy. You know, Baba put our names together.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we heard the voice, we went and someone motioned, the Mondali motioned for us to come over to Baba, so we hurried over to him. And I don't remember whether, I know we didn't kneel in front of him. I don't know how we did, but we definitely did not stand. And so Baba made fists very tightly. I noticed his white knuckles, you know, when you really make a tight fist.
Mm-hmm.
And he held his hands, his fists, right up to our faces, very close, and looked very, very deeply into our eyes. And he just shook his hands like this, you know, just shook his hands in front of our faces and said, hold fast to my Dhamma. With both hands, tightly hold on to my Dhamma with both hands. And he would hold his hands in front of my face and then in front of Peggy's face and back again. I thought later on it was sort of like, you know, do you hear me? Are you listening?
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting through to you? Is sort of what he seemed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, no matter what happens, hold fast to my Dhamma, and then again to both of us. And then we were excused. later on, we thought about this very much. We thought, he said, no matter what happens, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. What was he warning us about? What dreadful thing is coming to us? And whether it was to still our minds, whether it was to comfort ourselves or what, I don't know. But then we finally came to the conclusion that he meant, take my Dhamma now. Don't wait until whatever happens, happens. Right. Take it now, hold fast to it. And so we felt satisfied that that was what he was really giving us. Then he, very soon he, that was it. And then we were excused from his presence. And Baba got up and walked through that building out into the tarmac, and was nodding and smiling and, you know, sort of giving those in his immediate presence his, you know, acknowledging that they were there and so forth. So they had one of those little things like they have over here at the airport, in Pune at the airport, those portable stairs that they used to use in the small planes and still do. And I don't know, I guess it was because I wanted to be close to him that I went over to the foot of, Peggy and I went over to the foot of those stairs. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I didn't think about this until he started to walk up the stairs. And then I took the hem of his sadra in my fingers and I held to it until I would have tugged on it, which I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And that was my last touch, physical touch with him. And,
then this was 56.
58.
This is 58.
Yes, 58. And so he entered the plane. I didn't even see him go in the plane. It seemed like when I left go of that Dhamma, I didn't see anything else until they taxied the plane up to the right, up to our right, turned it around, and taxied down fast, you know, to take off. And Baba was had his face close to the window, and he was had his right hand waving to all of us, and off he went up into the sky, and that's the last we saw of him in his physical presence. Now, the next really... Okay. I think from this point, I would have to go to the darshan in 69.
Now, in 62, though, you did come to India?
No.
No, you didn't?
No.
Okay.
No, we never saw Baba here in India.
Was there any particular reason why he didn't come in 62?
I might be able to give reasons, but I don't know that they're valid. I don't know.
Just didn't.
Yes, there were reasons, but
because your name was on the list, were you scheduled to go and then didn't go?
We never knew that we were scheduled to go. We never felt. We never felt that we were invited, although he did make it sort of a blanket invitation. Are you talking about the men? The men
East-West, not the 54.
Okay. I know that at that particular time, Peggy's grandson was having very critical surgery. He was having, he had to have a piece taken out of his hip bone and put into his spine. Mm-hmm. And it was a touch-and-go situation. And we didn't feel that we could come here and not have that on our minds continually, because we were really concerned very much about his, it was a life-threatening operation. And I know that I've always felt that if Baba had wanted us to be here at that time, we would have come. Maybe that's a cop-out, I don't know. But I
had a list of people that were coming. I thought your name was on that list.
I don't know if it was or not. Now, there were certain people that he said, you must come.
Yes.
And there were people that said, will you come? And things like that. We had no such
direction.
No such hint from him. If we had felt... It wasn't that we felt we had to have a personal invitation engraved and so forth and so on, but... For some reason or other, we thought it was not necessary. I don't know. It's hard for me to answer, really.
Well, in 58, did you have any other incidents?
Well, observations, you know. One thing that that touched me very deeply, and that it could have been unnoticed by other people that were there. We were following, oh yes, I have to tell you about Peggy's ankle too, that's really important. Let me do that first. We were walking down to the barn one evening. We had several night sessions with Baba, and for some reason or other, the night sessions were very highly charged, just very much so. The daytime sessions were more relaxed, more, you know, family sort of thing, but the night sessions were powerful sessions. And we were walking down to one of those night sessions, and Peggy, in order to get out of the way of the car that was coming, she stepped on the side of the sand road and turned her ankle. And I could hear it. I heard the bones. I heard the grating. And she didn't say anything and went to the meeting, walked the rest of the way down to the meeting, sat through the entire meeting, never said to me, my ankle hurts, I'm in pain, and she was in excruciating pain. I think you appreciate that.
I
now.
Definitely can.
Right.
Hardly
walked. Oh, she walked, but, and then I don't remember how exactly.
Okay. So she sat through the meeting.
Yes, she sat through the meeting, and when it came time to leave, I think someone noticed that she was unable to walk, and arranged that she could ride back to the center in the car, mm-hmm. and we did. And you see, we always waited in the barn until Baba left the barn before any of us. We all would stand up when Baba stood up, and we always wait until he left the room, and then we would file out, you see. So then we were driven to the lagoon cabin. And there again, Baba's chair was in the center of the room. There were people standing in back, but I didn't see any of them. I really didn't. I don't know who was there. But we took Peggy in and sat her on the floor, and Baba said, show me where it hurts the most. And Peggy reached down and put her finger on somewhere on the outside of her ankle. And Baba reached down and put his hand over her ankle. Mm-hmm. And it, she got up and walked out and walked away, and it never gave her a second's pain, no discomfort, no swelling, no nothing. It was absolutely healed.
Yeah, that's a miracle. Sheila? Could you make a cup of Nescafe for Andy?
Aren't you going to have some?
I just thought.
Oh.
Could you make him a cup of coffee, Sheila?
Well, no. If she has something to do, that's all right.
Did Amon come?
Huh?
Amon
came? No,
he's
coming.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to interrupt you. So, that was a very intimate touch.
Yeah, that's a very good story.
No.
Tapo aaya
kya? No.
Abhi tak le aaya?
Aaya. Hai na tapo. Tumhar naam kaise?
Tapo aaya, but hamara ko nahi.
No.
Here's 160. Shock photo studio, medicates, crutches, lock up the door, egg pair, and on the.
Okay.
You know, a coupon on the shop. Pilot crutches, a jolly one.
Another happening was when Adi gave a talk in Jane Haynes' house.
Mm-hmm. During that 58?
No. This is
it. You started to say about following people during that 58.
Do you want sugar?
No, thank you, dear. I can't have sugar.
What about that? What's that other stuff called? Equal? Would you like Equal?
I don't need any sweetener at all. It'll be
just
fine.
Just coffee?
Do you want strong or just medium?
Oh, just medium will be fine. Any way you fix it.
Well, she's making it in milk. Do you prefer it in water?
The milk will be fine. Milk will be fine.
Should I make with milk or
water? Yeah, milk. You started saying 58, before you told this incident about you were following people. And
oh, yes. We were walking down to the barn for an afternoon session or morning, I'm not sure which. And very, I would say maybe about 10 paces behind Baba was this lady walking, and she seemed to be walking alone, because we always, like children, we always wanted to get closer to him, and we'd skirt around the bushes and cut each other off and do all kinds of things. But she got a little twig in her sandal, mm-hmm. and she stopped to remove it. And the instant that she stopped and lifted her foot, Baba stopped. You see, he was walking in front of her.
Yeah,
okay. He turned around, and I could see him very clearly, and looked at her and smiled. And I could see in his face he was saying, "That's all right, darling. I'll wait."
Who was that woman?
I don't know. I have no idea. She took the twig out of her sandal, put her foot down. He turned around and continued. Mm-hmm. This was one of the most touching, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And thinking about it in retrospect, I thought, not only did he know what happened, not only did he know that this was just a very trivial discomfort to one of his lovers,
yeah.
not only did he know it, but he acknowledged it. He turned around, and not only did he acknowledge the discomfort in her foot, but he made her realize that she needn't be upset about delay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So considerate. Yeah. This was such a manifestation of his complete compassion of, yeah. you know, of everything. And I can't tell you how touched I was with that. I thought later on, if he had not been who he was, he wouldn't have known what had happened. Thank you, dear. And he would not have acknowledged it because he would have been too important to. So that was really meant a great deal to me.
Yeah.
I think it probably showed me something about his divinity. Because I never related to Baba as the Godhood. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah.
I only know that I loved him. And I always said later, after the meeting, the first meeting in the barn, I always said,
after what?
After our first meeting in the barn,
mm-hmm.
I said, I don't care if he's the garbage man. Mm. Doesn't make a bit of difference. Yeah. He doesn't have to be God for me.
Yeah.
Really. And I still feel that way. Mm. I know he is that. No question about it. But to me, he was a very dear friend,
mm-hmm.
the closest kind of a friend that I could imagine. And I never had, he didn't ask me for any qualifications. He didn't say, are you a sinner? Are you a saint? Are you this? Are you that? Are you educated? Are you poor? Mm-hmm. Or are you anything? And I didn't ask him for any. Mm-hmm. I didn't say, now, if you're God, that's fine. If you're not, forget it.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of things never pass between us. You mm-hmm. know? And so, I always remember that, the physical touch of that embrace. I sometimes feel that in the embrace of his lovers.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes see his eyes in the eyes of his lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I'm such a hugger. I think people sometimes think that's an affectation or something, but it's not. I also feel the love of the lover.
Yeah.
I share that with them. But often I feel his presence very strongly in those embraces.
Yeah.
I never fail to feel it in Mani's embrace.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Oh, when Adi was giving the talk in Jane's apartment, the room had been filled, her living room had been filled before we arrived. We were just matter of a minute late. And so they arranged two chairs here for us. Adi was sitting here, facing the living room.
Yes.
We were sort of seeing Adi from the profile.
Mm-hmm.
So he began his talk, and from time to time he would turn and look over at us. And I thought at first, is Adi upset because we were late? But I knew that's not like Adi, so I dismissed that idea.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while he'd look over at us, and every time he did it would be a little longer look, you know. I didn't realize that he was really being very courteous and very sweet, and meant to include us in with the group, you see.
Yeah.
But then it came a time when he seemed to look at us for quite a while. And I was looking at Adi's eyes. Adi disappeared. And I saw Baba's eyes, where Adi's eyes
mm-hmm.
were,
you see.
And Baba appeared to be looking through a rectangular hole in a thick oaken door.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the door was oak. Don't ask me why, but I just felt I could see. And he was looking very intently at me through that hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adi came back into view. And after Adi's talk, we got in the car and were driving back to our motel, and Peggy says, I want to tell you something. And I said, honey, let me tell you what, you know. It was like two little kids, you know, saying, oh, you found a turtle over there in the creek, well, let me show you what I found in the creek, you know, that sort of thing. I didn't want her to think that I was making up a story to match hers. Yeah. You know how people do. So I said, let me tell you. And I told her what I'd seen. And at the same time, she saw Baba standing in full form at his sadra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peggy also had seen Baba in Mercedes' apartment in New York. There was a balcony. It was a studio apartment, and there was a balcony, a long balcony. And Peggy said, we were sitting there, and Peggy said, did you see that? I said, what? She said, there was a man that walked across the balcony and went in through that door. And I'm waiting to see if he comes out. I don't know who he is. I wonder who he is. She never saw him again in that incident. At Darshan, I don't know whether you want this or not. It's a fairly long story.
Yeah, I do. Before, I just want to ask you one quick question.
Yes.
You say in 52 you were staying in a motel off the center.
Yes.
She's not here, I do. And then right after the meeting, then you didn't stay again. You drove directly back to Washington, D.C. after your meeting with Bob on May 17th.
I don't remember.
But you didn't see Bob again.
No,
must have gone back soon after.
It's quite possible that if not that day, the next day.
So you
because there was no reason to stay.
A day in advance or something.
Yes, that's right.
And what were you doing at the time? You were employed in the government? You were a draft?
Yes, I was employed by the space agency.
Mm-hmm. As an engineer?
No, as a design draftsman. And Peggy was, of course, managing a shop in the Shoreham at that time, Shoreham Hotel. She managed a beauty shop.
Too.
Yeah.
And could you give me your full name with your middle?
Andrew Muir, no middle name.
Mm-hmm. And Peggy's was Margaret?
No. Maud Anna Muir. Maud Anna Keyes was her name when I married her.
Yeah.
That was her first married name. But Maud, M-A-U-D-E,
mm-hmm.
Anna Muir.
Yeah. Okay.
But she didn't like the name Maud.
No. Right.
And so everyone called her Peggy. And
right.
Thought of her as a, yes.
Did they ever do an index thing?
Okay. Okay.
Could you give me your birth date?
11th of May, 1914.
And Peggy?
January the 4th, 1898.
Okay. We're just putting up when people meet Bob, you know, Andrew Muir,
right.
36.
And I might mention that we met Bob on the 17th of May, 1952, and we buried Peggy on May 17th.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
You don't want that, but I just thought I'd mention it. I didn't know that. It seems quite a
very
coincidental.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Exquisite timing of Baba.
And weren't you at Ivy's house when they had that dinner in 56?
Mm-hmm. But not, we didn't attend any dinner. We were just simply helping with mob control or crowd control or helping people check their invitation and that sort of thing. Sort of help.
Volunteers.
Help the thing move along. We came up to Mercedes' house a day early, so that we could help with all those things for her.
That's mentioned in the Awakening account.
Oh.
No,
Mommy. No? Okay, we'll see what Almond's doing.
He's not taking my glass.
You've got some. Take your pants off if you have to do something.
Mom. Wow.
You want coffee? Ask Grandma, she'll give it. Okay. 69, you came for the darshan?
Yes. Now, 69 was the time, the first morning of darshan, that we had the experience of being with Baba without seeing him visually.
Mm-hmm.
That experience was so natural as it was when we actually would see him prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
His presence was no less strong.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very much as I had on my first embrace with Bob.
Mm-hmm.
There was no...
I just wondered,
yes.
You hadn't met any of the women or anything in that 52 Peggy also hadn't met.
No.
In New York?
No, no. I had never met any of the women Motley until the darshan. And I was so surprised to have had that pleasure, that privilege. I think perhaps I might tell this particular story, and I doubt if you want to have it on tape, so you'll probably hear me tell this story later, so I won't waste your tape. All right. I think the things I'm going to tell you now are not things that may be appropriately used in a book, but they're some of my most precious experiences in relation to Baba. The first morning of darshan, we had arrived in the car.
Mm-hmm. This is just water, I didn't know, juice. Why don't you go outside and just... Because just water, no juice. Okay. Go outside and find out. What is
juice?
And we got out of the car, and just a moment or two after that, Mani came around from, let's say, you're facing Guruprasad.
Mm-hmm.
Mani came around from this corner of the building,
mm-hmm.
on ground level, not on the porch, you see. And it sort of surprised me, and I don't know why it did, but it did. And I didn't recognize her at first, because I suppose it might have been because the sun was shining on her face, but her face had a golden... It must have been sunlight, but I just felt it was a golden glow. It was a beautiful, warm, golden glow.
Mm-hmm.
And before I recovered from that, she walked over and embraced Peggy. And then she embraced me. And I'll tell you what happened during that embrace. It's so precious. You know, of course, the feeling that you have when you hold an infant in your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And you look down at that helpless little form, and it's so innocent and so sweet and so lovely that it's just there's something about that that nothing else can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that. I next felt that feeling that when a toddler walks beside you and wraps his whole hand around one of your fingers,
mm-hmm.
and you walk together, that wonderful feeling of companionship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't anything like it. And then I had the feeling that I have when a 8, 9, 10-year-old little girl sits on my lap and looks up at my face with that innocent, beautiful, trusting look. There's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I next felt the physical embrace of Baba. There was a sensuousness in it, but no lust.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the softness of her. I felt the warmth. I felt, you know, that sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like that. And then I felt the sensation that I feel when I embrace Mansari. That whole, that just mm-hmm. came in that embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that. Then it was time for us to go in for darshan, right? Now, we noticed these three young men standing nearby him in very earnest, serious conversation, but of course we didn't know what was going on. We went in and had darshan, our appointment with God at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the very early the next morning at the turf club in Pune, where we stayed, I awoke, I was lying on my back, and my face was wet with tears. My chest was wet. I hadn't been dreaming, nothing. And almost, maybe that's what woke me, I don't know, but I heard this bird song outside. You know how our mockingbirds sound, just so full of song and